the trade, or if transaction costs may include the increase in the stock price that would be caused by purchasing such a high volume of shares. For example, the SPY, again with $290 billion in assets under management, they would need to purchase about 1.8 million shares of Tesla. So what I wonder in that circumstance is if they feel like purchasing that amount of shares over a six-day period would be expected to cause a big enough increase in the stock price for Vanguard to instead be accommodating of some misweighting for some additional period of time. Now, this is just one example of one fund, and even if they don't factor in stock price appreciation from buying as part of their transactional costs that they mention here, it still shows that there are caveats and exceptions that can be in play. So this kind of brings me into my main point here, which is I think there's this assumption that all the funds just buy and match the S&P 500 index identically. That's nice in theory, but there's no way for that to really work. All the index funds can't just say, yes, we want 26 million shares of Tesla at whatever the index price ends up being, and then we're all set, we're all equal weight, and we're all tracking the index perfectly. It doesn't work that way because in a transaction like that, a 26 million share purchase, the first share of that is going to be a lot cheaper than the 26 millionth. The first share you can probably buy on the open market, but as you keep buying, the price is going to keep going up and up. You find fewer willing sellers. So regardless, you end up with a variation between funds that are trying to track the S&P 500. That variance is the concept that I want to explore here in more detail because I think it will be pretty illuminating. So the first thing we need to understand here is how the actual S&P 500 index returns are calculated. As I mentioned in the first episode, that's based on the S&P 500's divisor, which standardizes the index over time with all the changes that occur to it. An example of one of those changes being a company being added or dropped. So the divisor takes care of those things. That's all we really need to understand for this conversation. And we know from that same Indexology blog by David Blitzer that, quote, the closing price is the price the S&P Dow Jones Indices uses to adjust the index divisor, end quote. Meaning that whatever day Tesla is actually added to the index, the closing price on that day will be what is used to determine the return on investment of the S&P 500 index. So that is the price that these funds will be trying to track. As we just talked about, we know there's going to be variance. Not all 26 million of these shares are going to be able to be purchased at the exact same price. So I was curious how much that variance could actually impact the returns of an individual fund, given that Tesla is actually only going to be about 1% of the weight of those funds. Putting this into an example, let's compare the overall performance of a couple different funds here based on assumptions of different entry points for their Tesla position. For this example, we'll assume that on the day the S&P 500 adds Tesla to the index, Tesla stock closes at $1,600 per share, putting Tesla's weight in the index at about 0.91%, meaning that of the $4.6 trillion in assets under management tracking the S&P 500, about $42 billion should be allocated into Tesla. Again, that equates to about 26 million shares. That means the remaining balance of these funds is 99.1% in the other S&P 500 stocks, so about $4.56 trillion of the $4.6 trillion dedicated to those stocks. For this example, let's assume that Tesla, after 1 year, approaches $2,500 per share, so a one-year return of 56%, and let's assume that in combination, all the other S&P 500 stocks perform at about 5% for one-year return. That would mean the valuation of the Tesla shares owned by these index funds would increase to about $65 billion, while the total assets under management would increase to about $4.85 trillion. Tesla's new weight in the index would be about 1.3%, up from 0.9%, and the overall return for the index would be at 5.5%. That's a combination of the 56% return on Tesla in this example and the 5% return on the other stocks. So that mixes out to 5.5% total. And let's see how that 5.5% return compares to a fund that either bought Tesla at a higher price or at a lower price. First, let's take a look at Fund A here. Let's assume that they bought Tesla after the S&P 500 inclusion sort of took place. Maybe they were waiting around for a cheaper price and they never got it, so they ended up buying in at an average of $2,000 per share. They still need to end up accumulating about the same 2.6 million shares, because if they stuck with that 0.9%, they're just going to be perpetually underweight Tesla, because by the time Tesla is $2,000 per share, well, it makes up 1.1% of the index in this example. So they end up buying a similar amount of shares, but they have to sell off a little bit more of their other assets to get the weighting in balance. For this example, let's just simply assume that the funds that we are talking about make up 10%